is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Why are we giving up on America's cities? Well, you know, friends, that conversation started with Baltimore and, of course, Representative Elijah Cummins. But there's a lot more to this story in what's happening to America's cities. This is just the tipping point that puts it in purview for all of us to really take a look at America's cities. Also, dealing with rogue governments, we've got a power-packed program here. I'll tell you this one here is, you see what's happening with Iran, North Korea, and you can go right down the list of rogue governments. You definitely want to hear this one, friends. An unbelievable program today on Viewpoints, and we want to start with the top stories here. Let's welcome in here Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. He's a retired police lieutenant, a director of school security. He's a master trainer, owner of Pangaro Training, and host of Chasing Justice here on America Out Loud. Joining Joe, Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality here at America Out Loud. Ava is a best-selling author. Her books are on Amazon and on the America Out Loud bookstore. You can get those links right at the platform, friends. I want to start with some good news for a change. You hardly ever get that. But the economy, well, there was a record 157,288,000 employed in July. This is the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that this was a record here that's just happened here in this past month. The unemployment rate held steady at about 3.7%. Joe, why do you think consumer confidence is so high? What's driving this?
Well, I think it's pretty clear, Malcolm, that if people have a job, you have an ability to look down the road and say, I can do some things now. You know, maybe you wanted to buy a car or you wanted to buy a house, send your kid to school, anything. That if you don't have a job and you have no income, it's very difficult to make any plans. But if you do have work, and as you just said, there are more jobs than there are people now available to fill them, people have a much better sense of the future if they have that income coming in. They can make their plans. They can live their lives.
If you notice, there's not much of this talking points coming from the Democratic debates or from the left. They don't know how to deal with the economy. How will they be able to fight the economy coming into the general election here?
I don't think they really can fight it. There's also another little golden, thing here as well. Not just the jobs the employment rate is so high, but the savings rate of families is very, very high. It's higher than it's been for many, many years. And this is a sign of a stable economy. In other words, you have so many jobs that you can't fill them all. And it's roaring. It's great. More than 7 million job openings right now. So, these people that we're importing, however, are not qualified to do the job. So there's that little gap. But all over, it's, the media is denigrating President Trump pretty much, 24/7. So he'll have to toot his own horn.
While we're on the economy, let's talk about the trade deal, what's going on with China. This is a huge story, to say the least. We've talked about this for many, many years. President Trump is really the first one to go after China in this way. Well, it's kind of been a relationship now where we've stepped on the gas, off the gas, on the gas. He's trying to give China a chance, an opportunity to catch the situation and save face. China, of course, is a very difficult country to deal with when it comes to this sort of a thing. And they just don't honor their agreements, number one, and they don't follow through with what they say they're going to do. There was a supposed deal a couple of weeks back, and actually a couple of months back. There's been a series of them, Ava, but each one has fallen out, and it's fallen apart at the last minute. So the president comes out here just a day or so ago and says that he's going to put tariffs back up on 300 billion Chinese goods, 10% tariffs, and that'll take effect September 1st. That sent the market in a flurry. And, of course, the Chinese, the foreign ministry came out and said that They said the world's largest economy, pointing to the United States, should give up its illusions, shoulder some responsibility, and come back to the right track on resolving the trade war. And they said the Chinese are just not going to back down, Ava. What's going to give on this, you think?
Oh, they'll back down. They'll back down when they get enough pain. And the pain's coming for them. Americans shouldn't shrivel under this, because most of the stuff we have imported from China, I mean, take a walk through Walmart or Target or one of these places. I mean, it's junk.
It's okay? Trinkets, yeah.
And some of it is so toxic, you can't even let your kid put it in their mouth, okay? So let's all cry for China. Let's all cry for the United States. You know, this doesn't fly with me, okay? This is way long overdue, for one thing. All right.
Yeah, most of those junkets, you turn around, you're right, they say made in China. I mean, pretty
and so
well.
So, you know, your iPad or your iPhone might cost a little bit more. Well, guess what? Hold on to the older phone.
Well, Trump has been pushing them to build that stuff in the U.S., actually.
That's Apple, exactly
speaking of Apple.
Right.
Yeah.
This is exactly right. If we put tariffs on this stuff, guess what? It's going to drive manufacturers back to the United States. So hold on, folks, before you all panic.
Wow.
That's
so that is the flip side of this. That's interesting. Joe, what do you think about that and bringing more of this back? Because we've lost a ton of manufacturing. In fact, that was one of Trump's goals, is to bring more of that. And we're being successful in that realm.
Well, Malcolm, what I'm seeing is I try and take a 1,000 feet above the ground look at this.
Okay.
The Chinese have a leader who is there for life. We have a president who's here for 4 or 8 years. When we see that he's not, President Trump is not being backed by his Congress or anything, the Chinese can simply wait us out, because we get a new president who's basically going to buckle. If it's one of these Democrats, they're going to buckle to the Chinese and say, listen, let's go back to the way it was. We'll take off the tariffs, and we just keep getting beat as the American people. There is a time you have to take a stand, and I feel bad for some of the industries that have to take a little bit of a hit. Prices have to go up a little bit. But Ava, your point is exactly right. A lot of the items that we get from the Chinese market, they're not super high quality. What they are is they're low in price, which addresses a whole nother segment of our society that doesn't have the money to buy the best sets of plates or bowls. So it's nice that they can get cheaper sets of bowls. But at some point, we have to take a stand. There is no way to get out of this with no pain. Mm-hmm. But the Chinese need us more than we need them, and we need to stay strong on this. And if the president had a little backing, the Chinese would see, hey, the Americans are serious about this. No matter who comes next, we're going to make sure that they continue, and we would be able to probably get them to move quicker.
Well, Joe, what you just said is the crux of this, actually. That's exactly the point, what you just said. And because what's happening is, as I repeatedly say, the Chinese miss nothing, as any of these. Russia, everybody sees our local news domestically here in the States, what's going on. And you're right. They see the infighting going on with the Democrats and Republicans. They see that we can't agree on anything. They see all of that. And so what we've got now is we've got a major problem because they're playing to the political games in Washington is what they're doing, sadly. And we see that time and time again here. Let's talk about director of National Intelligence nomination here, John Ratcliffe. So President Trump pulled the nomination back. It was a lot of quick response to John Ratcliffe becoming this potential director of national intelligence. There were a lot of threats up front. And so President Trump, this was, by the way, to replace Dan Coats, who will resign on August 15th. So the president put a tweet out that says, our great Republican congressman, John Ratcliffe, is being treated very unfairly by the lame street media. Rather than going through months of slander and libel, I explained to John how miserable it would be for him and his family to deal with these people. He's therefore decided to stay in Congress, where he's done such an outstanding job. You know, I actually thought about that, Ava, because if you lose him in Congress, that's a big loss. He's a Republican out of Texas. That would be a significant loss. Although I think he would make a very interesting director of national intelligence, this was really pressured because he was being threatened by Schumer and others, the Democrat leaders. Dianne Feinstein came out and she had things to say. What do you think about this story?
I think this is horrible, because this is now how the Democrats want to do business. They want to play this game. They want to Kavanaugh everybody, okay? That's a verb now. It's going to be in the vernacular, because You saw what they did to Justice Kavanaugh. This is what they do to Trump appointees, okay? This is why Trump has so many temporary placeholders in his cabinet, and it's hurting our country. So Democrats are willing to burn the country down, okay? That's what I want people to get from this story. Understand that.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a point to that. Joe, the New York Times reported that Ratcliffe had exaggerated aspects of his resume, basically, is what they said. They had already started that. I mean, it's only been like hours before
this
thing
happened. That's baloney, by the way.
Yeah. I'm glad you said baloney and not the other. So in addition to the inconsistencies on his resume, Ratcliffe met resistance from the not only Democrats, but some Republicans as well had started out. Now, Dianne Feinstein came out and said, and I quote, "By law, this position requires extensive national security expertise. Congressman Ratcliffe appears to lack the experience needed for the job. This isn't a learn-as-you-go position and shouldn't be given out to political supporters." Lieutenant Joe, what do you say about that?
Well, I think immediately the first thing we heard really was that he was a Trump loyalist. Mm-hmm. And this is what they can't seem to abide, that they have somebody who's going to stand by the president. And that really seemed to drive them crazy. Their heads were exploding. And he's a loyalist. What should the president do? Let me pick Feinstein to come in here and do this. Somebody who absolutely is against me. This is what is absurd about the way we do these things. If he believes that this man has the qualifications to step in there, and he did a great job in the hearings, by the way, he really stood
up.
And that's one of the reasons he wants somebody who's strong and a loyalist to have somebody finally stand up. The man stood up, and you know, the DNI is an important position, but you're not running CIA, you're not running FBI, you're coordinating all the information from those agencies. So you do need someone who has an understanding of it. I think the man has the intelligence to do it. Whether he padded his resume a little bit, that's something that we could certainly look at. But he seems to be a qualified individual. And if that's who the president wants, that's who we need to put in there, because the administration has to run on all eight cylinders, not running by the enemy's decisions of how it should run.
Yeah. The Pentagon is testing these mass surveillance balloons. This is a very interesting story that my eyes opened up twice as wide here. So what the military is doing is they're conducting a wide area surveillance test across six Midwest states. So if you live in some of these states like Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Missouri, South Dakota, et cetera, this is kind of where you're going to be impacted by this sort of a thing. So they've got high altitude balloons. We're talking at about 65,000 feet up. So that's up twice about your airlines are at about 35,000. So think of 65,000 feet up, people. And so these are designed up there and they're solar powered, by the way, and they're designed to be able to watch any movement, any traffic in, they're saying it's a surveillance system to locate and like narcotics trafficking, homeland security threats, things like that. Let me ask you first, Dave, before I go to Joe, who's obviously law enforcement, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on this as a civilian? Do you like this idea? Does it have merit?
I love it. I love it. I think it's great. There are lots of things that go on out on, you know, on tracts of land, and I'm going to probably get myself in trouble saying this. There's a specific ideology in this country that gathers together and separates themselves from us. And there's great danger lurking right here in our own country, right within our own borders. And Joe can probably speak to this much more than I, but I've done a lot of research being a writer on this subject. So I applaud the military.
So you support it. You think it's a good thing. You don't feel bad. Okay, uncomfortable. All right.
Well, 100%. 100%.
Now, Joe, that's the reason I didn't know where Ava would be on that, but I wanted to get her thoughts before you went off on a couple of things. And here's the thing. The American Civil Liberties Union came out and said, "We do not think that American cities should be subject to wide area surveillance in which every vehicle could be tracked wherever they go." Of course, they're already doing that through Google Maps and every other damn thing, Joe, so I don't see what the surprise here is. So a couple things here. Does the ACLU have a point in this particular case? Number one. Two, is this good that the military is doing this? Three, is this a little too Orwellian for where we're at right now?
Okay, so let's unpack that. There's a lot there. When I look at it as an individual and I see what the ACLU is saying, that you're giving the government this tremendous power to watch us. Now, if our better angels are in charge of the government, they're going to look for drug traffickers. They're going to look for terrorist groups. They're going to look for the camps that are being set up. We're going to look for the border being invaded by different people. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. That helps us because we're going after bad guys and bad girls. The other side of that is if you have an administration in charge of that who decides, we just want to see who the Trump supporters are. We want to watch them. We want to use this surveillance tool for a nefarious position. Now you've given them a lot of power. I know that, you know, the whole inception of the drones, the whole drone thing where drones are flying all over the place, has really created a very similar type of a situation where you have the ability now to look over my neighbor's fence and see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of courts have held with privacy, I put up a fence for my privacy. And now just because you can fly something over the top, you can look in, you're invading my privacy.
Right.
You need a search warrant to do that. And for, as a government entity, to look in my yard, you need a search warrant to fly a drone and do that. You're going way beyond that. You're going way up top. And we know that the optical equipment that is available now certainly could look down and see a license plate. It could see a hair in somebody's nose if they wanted to. So they have a complete view of all of us. And it just depends on the eyeballs that are behind those. Are they good guy eyeballs or bad guy eyeballs looking at us? So I'm kind of in between with it. I think there is a specific purpose, and I think we could certainly make a case for it. But I think the case needs to be made maybe to a court. Hey, we're going to fly these because we have these concerns we need to look at. Mm-hmm. Make the case, and then I'm okay with it. Just right. Given the government broad stroke power to do these kind of things, when you get a bad government in there, now you have a problem. You've given them that power over you, that surveillance.
Well, that's the problem we've been having in recent times with the FBI and the CIA and all these government agencies. It's a matter of trust. And so, Ava, you're willing to give that up. You think you can trust these folks to do the right thing, I assume.
I assume that, yes, I assume that law enforcement or military would do the right things. Okay. Even if they had a bad boss.
Right.
I think there are many times that they would push back and say, you know, this isn't something we should be doing. I do think there are good people that will do that. They'll push back against authority.
Let me turn to this other big news story here this past week. It got a lot of attention. In fact, the videos went viral many times over. And it was New York City policemen, the cops that were being taunted and tormented and really assaulted with buckets and buckets of water that were being thrown on the officers. And they were really being taunted. And buckets themselves were being tossed, which to me would seem like that is a felony in itself. Well, now there's a New York lawmaker pushing bills, a bill in New York to make water attacks on cops a felony. Of course, the governor would have to sign this, and there's no idea whether he would or he would not. Governor Andrew Cuomo up there, Democrat. So we'd have to see.
Doubtful.
They're trying to push that. So, okay. So let me just say it's Republican Assemblyman Mike LaPietre and Michael O'Reilly. They say New York State must send a message that this will not be tolerated. And I am confident that this bill provides law enforcement the tools they need to properly react. Joe, I was shocked, surprised, and appalled, really, that the policemen didn't do something and that they kept, I mean, well, let me just ask you, why did they not arrest the perpetrators right there on the spot? I mean, that is assault, is it not?
It absolutely is assault. It's inappropriate. It's interfering with law enforcement. It's creating a danger for everybody, especially the one video of the officers making an arrest and they're throwing water on them and somebody actually hit one of the cops in the head with a bucket.
That's right.
While he's trying to arrest someone. Mm-hmm. People have a tendency to resist, especially to these days more than ever. Mm-hmm. And if you're being interfered with and people are throwing stuff at you and somebody makes a move, has a hidden weapon, grabs at the cop's gun, somebody is going to get very seriously hurt. And they're not going to say that it's the perpetrator's fault that did it. They're not going to say that it's the crowd that caused it. They're going to say that the evil cops who hate everyone, it's their fault. And we have to go after those officers personally. We'll sue them. We'll send them to jail because we are in a very, very strange place in our country. The closer and closer we march to this, what I've been calling, you know, right now we're in the cold civil war, but the hot civil war that's coming, this is just another symptom of it. When you can attack police officers brazenly in public and the politicians don't stand up and demand that we change, that there should have been an immediate statement that if anyone throws water at law enforcement, they will be arrested, and we send force to go after whoever these people are, because this is not right. Because what happens next when somebody decides to throw one of those concrete milkshakes at somebody? What happens when the crowd just decides to swarm the officers and now pull them off of who they're arresting? This is what's coming. And if we don't put a stop to it now, we are asking for the chaos that will follow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Ava, the public perception of this, as Joe points out, I'm also wondering, you know, as people see this now, to Joe's point, we're already seeing groups like the Antifa, which the president just spoke about making a possibly a domestic terrorist group, which clearly many people believe should be done. But they're already using those concrete milkshakes that Joe just talked about. You could absolutely see those being used next in a complete assault on police, which would really be the under effects of what has happened since Ferguson moving forward. The public perception of this was not good, was it?
Policing has changed tremendously in the last 10 years, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And it all started with the Beer Summit in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and a president who was half black, and he had a chip on his shoulder about police officers. And I've never been so ashamed of my president in my life as I was when Obama did that to that police officer. I could feel the humiliation and shame that poor man went through. This is what we have. It's a top-down kind of thing. And Trump's trying to turn it around, but in all these big Democrat-run cities, this is the attitude that they have. You know, you look at these mayors like de Blasio and all these guys, They don't care about the cops. Mm-hmm. They don't care at all about them. And I'll tell you another thing I'm noticing too. It's very difficult for towns and communities to even hire cops anymore. Nobody wants to be a police officer and treated like that.
Yeah, recruiting is way down.
Very dangerous job. It's a very dangerous job. And when you add that element to it, there are no rules anymore, then we're really in trouble.
The question I ask you, I want to talk about next, why are we giving up on America's cities? We'll do that next, friends, as Viewpoint moves on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. But when you think of markets like St. Louis, Missouri, Detroit, Michigan, Memphis, Tennessee, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Oakland, California, Kansas City, Missouri, Stockton, California, Cleveland, Ohio, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Baltimore, Maryland. Those are the top 10 most dangerous cities in the United States that I just gave you right there. And I mentioned Baltimore last because that is now front and center thanks to a feud or war that's been going on with Representative Elijah Cummins and President Donald Trump. Let's talk about that now, friends, and why are we giving up on America's cities and how do we save them? Joining us on the program here is Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist. He's a philosopher, patriot, certainly a friend here at America Out Loud. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, and global stability. Dr. Ron Martinelli is here. He's a retired police detective, a forensic criminologist, a national voice. And his book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, is available, friends, on Amazon anywhere. Just look up Dr. Ron Martinelli and right at the America Out Loud bookstore, which we always proudly tell you about. And we sell a lot of books there, by the way. We can see what the numbers there. A lot of people are buying books on the bookstore. It's right on the navigation bar at AmericaOutloud.com. Have some fun in there and go support some great authors while you're at it here. All right, so the national dialogue started with Baltimore. The tweet came out from the president here. Baltimore's numbers are the worst in the United States on crime and the economy. Billions of dollars have been pumped in over the years, but to no avail. The money was stolen or wasted. Ask Elijah Cummings where it went. He should investigate himself with this oversight committee. That was a stellar tweet that came out from President Donald Trump.
You know, the president's basically just calling it like it is. There has been a great deal of neglect that has gone into the way cities are managed in America for quite some time. And main reason for that is because the cities have taken, or city governments and officials have taken a coddling attitude towards the people that live there in macabre fashions, and that the best people that live there are looked down upon, and the worst people that live there are basically thought of as some sort of protectorate. And it's upside down from how one would actually treat the population of a city. I do not understand to why, when all is said and done, you know, the cities don't recruit the best people. They chase them away to the suburbs, and in some cases, they chase them out of states. For instance, in California, and the problem that we're now seeing is that degree of neglect. Nobody wants to put any energy into our main cities, and so they languish, and disease, crime, all these things come out, and we need to turn that around.
The connection between depressed conditions, drugs, human trafficking, as homelessness. It's been proven now, as I've studied this topic and you look at this, I mean, it's been proven that all of these factors are factoring into the decline of these cities and these markets, and they're factoring into the uptick in all these areas. Dr. Ron Martinelli, so, you know, America's cities, again, Baltimore's only the talking point, the latest one from the president, Elijah Cummings, who's done a horrible job for Baltimore. But you could say that right across the board on a lot of these American cities. Quite frankly, Ron, they're going to hell in a handbag far too fast.
Well, you know, Malcolm, I like the list of the top 10 because I deal with these issues in my private practice every single day. As a matter of fact, every single one of those cities that you mentioned, I either currently have a case or more than one case or have had a number of cases. The number one problem for me, it breaks down to behavior and politics. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But the number two thing that we all as Americans need to keep in mind here, because the conversation goes from Cummings into this racial conversation, this racial narrative, it is not a racial problem. It's a cultural problem. But of what type of culture are we talking about? It's the confluence of ignorance, parental disengagement, entitlement, local, state, and federal enslavement of the people through more government entitlement subsidies, food stamps, Section 8 housing, free everything, and the systematic de-education of our youth by design from the socialist progressive left educational system that no longer teaches our kids and our young adults anything about civics, the rule of law, authority, respect for law enforcement. And these are the men and women that protect and defend the rule of law, and a completely complicit media. You put all those things together in a cauldron, and when it bubbles up, you get every single one of these cities. And Baltimore, the number two violent city in the nation, typifies that.
Dennis, there is a thread to all of this. Dr. Ron, I mean, he puts it in a summary. He just gave a good elevator conversation, if you were going to summarize it. And what is most important about what he puts in there that people need to get into their heads is that this is a cultural problem. It's not a racist problem. And so for the left immediately, which is their go-to card always, because it's sick, the behavior they use is absolutely outraged. That race is the denominator they use to fight real problems in the real world.
Let me turn that around just a little bit and make a counter accusation. All that stuff is happening, and yes, there is a definite movement that is out there that seeks to make these cities essentially the owned chattel of the better and elites of the left. Here's my counter accusation in terms of this is a cultural problem. One of the cultural problems here is that the people in the center and the people on the right have let the left do this. You know, we've stood by, moved to suburbs, moved away, not said anything. The political correctness of like, it's better to just keep quiet. These people are going to continue to do this until we get loud and tell them to stop. And one of the things I think we need to do is really take all the people that are in the center and the right of this country that have been essentially tolerant of this kind of stuff happening to the, until it starts to get to be a big problem. We need to turn that around. It's time to get active and basically understand we are, as a culture, invested in the future of the American system. And if we don't do something to get loud about it, it's going to continue to degrade. And so, you know, I just, one of the things that really bothers me about this is we're too nice about letting these people get away with this stuff.
And the question, and I don't know that you have an answer for this, but why does the right roll over so easy when it comes to these kinds of things? Because I can give you a lot of examples as to why they do that. And I want to say this to you, Ron. I said this on a program just this Friday, in fact, that I think the left is far smarter than the right. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I agree with everything that Dennis said. And number two, I agree with everything that you said. But as to the causative factors with regards to the center and the right, the discussion in the last, you know, 10 years especially has elevated or actually gone way down, if you know what I mean by elevation, into now everybody is scared of being called a racist. I mean, that is the card that's thrown down by the progressive left and these Democrats that have been running these cities and some of these states for 60 years or more. They're scared. The right is scared. And finally, you get a President Trump, who's not afraid to take this on. Hey, he thinks just like all of us in the center and the right do, the common sense conservatives. And you know what? People keep misidentifying President Trump as an extremist right-wing, you know, person. He's not. He's a conservative, common-sense conservative. And actually, he's more moderate.
He's a centrist.
Than he is. The word I like to use for Trump is that he's a populist, but he's a populist that's got balls. And he takes people on like Cummings. And Cummings doesn't know what to do with a guy like that. So, of course, the only thing he's got, because he has no interest in black people, just like Sharpton has no interest in black people. And what he does is he throws down the race card. But all you need to do is look at his behavior, look at Sharpton's behavior, tell me one thing that those guys have done to bring to the table for black Americans. But again, it's not this, it's the cultural thing, because there's plenty of poor whites that fall into this same category.
Yeah. Ron, one correction there. The words we use on the program are testicular fortitude, sir.
You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Well, we call that a lot of things, my friend. But Dennis, speaking about testicular fortitude. What I've talked about here and what I've promised folks is, why are we giving up on America's cities? And I think we've laid out a compelling case even already in the moments we've spoken, as the fact that too many people are lying down and they're letting this happen to a lot of our cities. Obviously, a lot of people have given up, Dennis. They've given up in our cities, and that's clear. And you and I have been having a conversation in recent days about the fact, and Ron could speak about this too, easy, about why people are also giving up on California. A lot of people have left that state, and that's part and parcel of what's happening with a lot of the stuff, because all those cities. But it's beyond California. It's everywhere. It's throughout the whole country. Portland, Seattle, again, New York, New Orleans, Louisiana. The list I just gave you that Ron pointed out, the top 10, that's all over. That's a national list. They're not. There's a couple, three of them in California, whatever. But that top 10 list is all over the country. What do you say? How do we fix this? How do we remedy this problem? And, I mean, is it just through the voting booth and it's just about elections again? Because a lot of these local municipalities vote to the left. They vote Democratic. Your mayors and your city councils and your town councils, they go leftist. Why is that, and how do we fix it?
There's a number of things that can be done. First of all, the biggest problem is that people have essentially left portions of the cities. And what the politicians have done is they've taken advantage of these holes in where people live, and they've gerrymandered the voting districts to make it so that you can't lose in those areas because of the way the population is distributed. But so that's one thing, is that's a level of bravery that I don't know how quickly it can be fixed. But the flight from the areas that are in trouble by the people who could vote in better officials in those areas needs to stop. That needs to turn around. We need to basically reinvade America from within. And I mean culturally reinvade America with our traditional values and bring them back into those areas that where for the past decade, two decades, we've been walking away from it. That is very, very critical to do. The other thing I would say, I'm not a white guy, okay? And I don't respect people that go through this whole racism argument one little bit. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't know how to be a good American, I don't care what your racial profile, preference, whatever is. It's a bunch of garbage, okay? This is a country, it's a plural country that is built on the principle that every one of us is equal, and we have to think, act, talk, and insist that that's the way that we're going to be.
Yeah. It would be nice if we could get people to think in those terms, Dennis, for sure. Absolutely. Ron, talk to me as far as how do we fix the problem in the urban cities in America?
Well, the biggest problem, and I tend to be somewhat pessimistic about this, is that this has taken generations to occur. And it's just endemic in some of these communities where we have generations of people that have become ignorant, that they bring nothing to the table. They don't have the education. They don't want to get the education. They don't want to obtain the job skills needed to move themselves up because the government subsidizes them. So I think the first thing that we need to do is turn that around by extremely limiting the subsidies that we give to people and or make them conditional upon getting involved in education and job training programs. Without that, you are not going to rise as a society. And then we have to completely change our educational system. And that means that the parents have got to get way more involved in these school boards and the parent teachers associations, because you've got these liberal unions that are basically running these school systems. So you have the inmates running the asylum, so to speak. And we have to return to the education of the people so they understand what the rule of law is, what the role of law enforcement is, and bring back the good behavior. And that means, again, totally revamping our criminal justice system. Some of the reforms I'm seeing in concept are good, but in reality and practicality, they're horrible. Horrible mistakes being made.
The point of drugs and human trafficking and homelessness, these are all central conditions to the deterioration of America's cities. And it's not going to get better until we do the things that Dr. Ron just put out there and that Dennis has put out there very clearly. It's going to take all of those factors, people, to move the needle here. We should not give up on America's cities. Well, listen, we're going to continue on with Viewpoint here, dealing with rogue governments, a power-packed panel on this amazing program here just ahead as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. go to healthycell.com/outloud or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. You know, in this next segment here, dealing with rogue governments, but I think it's important that we all are better informed. And I want to do that right now in this next program. And we've got two really top stories, people, both with Iran and North Korea are certainly on the top of rogue governments I want to talk to you about here. But let me bring in here a stellar group of people that you could not get any better than this here. And we'll start first off with Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. She's an author. Her newest book, Hamas, The Story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's Front Lines, is available in the America Out Loud bookstore and on Amazon. Joining as well, IQ Al Razuli is here. He's the author of the trilogy, Lifting the Veil. On the America Out Loud bookstore, you can get those or Amazon. Iraqi-born Arabic speaker is considered one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subjects of Islam. Let's add now in to make this a trifecta here, Baruch Plettner. Baruch is an entrepreneur, a scientist, an inventor. He is passionate about education, the war on globalism, but he is the editor-in-chief of Zionism.com, and he's a strong voice in these foreign affairs, and it is my privilege to bring all of these voices to the airwaves, friends. Ilana, IQ, and Baruch, welcome, please. And I want to start here and talk about Iran. So let me tell people a couple of facts here. The United States, we really began ratcheting sanctions on Iran in 1979 after the Iranian Revolution. And that's when things got a little more aggressive. And those sanctions have expanded to go after all kinds of things. A lot of their big oligarchs there, businesses, governments, individuals, you know, all kinds of people. And what's happening now with President Trump, he has really ramped up sanctions. I mean, like never before, probably. And now Iran's economy has plummeted. I mean, they are struggling in a way they probably haven't struggled before under the weight of these economic sanctions, really. And it's squeezing Iran right now badly. And I think that my question is, I want to start with, they've been doing a lot of nasty things right now. I mean, they're out there playing in the Straits of Hormuz. They're, toying with the British, you see, with some of the warships and other things that are going on here. What's behind all that? So in other words, are they, is it because they're being squeezed so badly? Ilana, what do you think to that end? Is that the reason?
It is part of the reason, because economically, Iran is doing so poorly, and it's gotten to the point where the Iranian government has stopped feeding its and paying its regular army. And so there's a lot of unrest in the army itself. But aside from that, the people are hurting. They're very restless because the prices of food are sky high. The whole economy is imploding because Iran's the government's basic focus is on its jihad with the world. So we have a situation in Iran that is being impacted seriously by the sanctions that America has put on it, but it also has a lot of internal problems.
In fact, Baruch, don't you think, I mean, what I understand, back to Ilana just saying, well, they can't even feed the army or do this, that, or the other. But I think part of the problem, too, is the one group they do feed and take care of is the Revolutionary Guard. And that's where their money is going to, is as a war monger. That's for sure. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would think so. I think that everything that Iran does and how we should always look at what it does or what it may do is through the lens of their primary objective, which is to become kind of the hegemon in the Gulf region and all over the Middle East, to restore the Shia primacy, or not even restore, maybe make Shia the primary force in Islam for the first time ever. Their bitterest enemies is actually not Israel is in America is one thing, but Saudi Arabia and the other Sunnis are even more so. So they have this plan where they want to become this kind of regional and even supra-regional superpower. And everything they do should be viewed through that. Now, the question is, what Trump is trying to do is he's trying to pressure them economically into giving up on that idea. And just live, you know, just prospering as Iran, as Persia, as an important, large country, but giving up on those dreams of regional hegemony. I personally do not believe that economic squeeze alone is going to accomplish that. They will do whatever it takes to circumvent that. They will cut, as Ilana mentioned, where it's possible to cut, but they will keep doing what needs to be done in order to not give up on that dream.
Their goals are so big and they're so determined to get to what you say they're the end goal that the squeeze doesn't seem to be taking an impact. IQ, in recent weeks, Iran, this Islamic Republic, they've attacked oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. They've shot down the U.S. military drone. When you see the economic squeeze, IQ, and what's happening right now, and their master plan for global supremacy, as Baruch puts out there, what gives with Iran? What's your take on it?
Well, first of all, Iran will never be a global hegemon. Iran is 15% of the Muslim population Shia. 85% is Sunni. The goal to have atom bombs is actually bullcrap to say that they are doing it for Israel. Iran wants an atom bomb to defend itself against Sunni Muslims. They are doing whatever they are doing because the European Union is undermining also the American people. What you have in NATO today, you have a European Union who is not part of NATO, who is not a supporter of America, who undermines it. The European Union should not support Iran because the goal of Iran is not just to have the Mahdi back. I don't know if you know this. Mm. In Shia Islam, the return of their Messiah, Al-Mahdi, who is the guide, supposed to be the guide of Islam, will only come through Armageddon when there is total war. And the threat of exterminating Israel will accelerate this enormously because Israelis learn a lesson. Their grandmothers, their grandparents were exterminated in concentration camps or expelled from native countries. So when somebody tells them, I will kill you, they take it seriously. New war will start with Israel, with a preemptive strike, with or without America. What do you think?
Does Iran right now, in your opinion, possess a nuclear weapon? Do they have a nuclear weapon right now?
In my opinion, based on history, it's not impossible, yes. Because every single time the CIA gave the wrong figures, the wrong dates about what Russia will have and when will Russia have it or when China will have it or where even Israel and Pakistan will have it in India. They were all wrong. They always underestimated the time scale. I have absolutely no doubt that within a month or two or less than a year or maybe even now, they have something.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And the question becomes then, when and if will they use that in the way that they have threatened with death to Israel and then death to America, but clearly Israel is their target. Let me ask Baruch the same question, please. Baruch, in your estimation, do you believe that Iran has a nuclear weapon right now?
They may be very close. They may have something rudimentary. But, you know, one thing about nuclear weapons is, as we know from every other country that's ever had them, including Israel, which, you know, they're according to foreign sources and all of that, performed a atmospheric test of its nuclear weapon somewhere with the help of South Africa over somewhere over the Indian Ocean, I guess, back in the 60s. As long as Iran has not really performed a nuclear test, it's really difficult to say that they actually have a nuclear device. And then the other question is it miniaturized? I believe that they're very close to have something that they could explode, but at the same time, I don't believe that they have something that's small enough to go on top of one of their ICBMs. They may be not far from that, but I don't think they have it right now.
Ilana, let's go over to you now, and you hear some of the thoughts here from IQ and Baruch there, and I want to ask you the same question here. At this moment of time, does Iran, in your opinion, possess a nuclear weapon?
I believe they do, and I'll tell you why. At the end of 2012, Iran moved a goodly portion of their strategic nuclear development out of Iran and over to North Korea in order to avoid the UN inspections. So the UN would not know what they're doing. And in North Korea, we know that first of all, we know what they were working on. They were working on plutonium bombs. They were working on miniaturization, as Baruch has said. And they were working on methods of deployment. And they did test their bomb 5 times, in fact, under the Mount Mantap in North Korea, which ultimately collapsed from the pressure. Mm-hmm. After the mountain collapsed, they brought a good part of their research back and their work back, but they had already accomplished a great deal. So the answer to your question is yes, I do believe they have a plutonium bomb. Have they deployed it yet? That's a question. But one of the things that they were working on in North Korea, remember, was miniaturization. Mm-hmm. So the point was to put it on top of one of their more slender missiles and be able to deploy it. I believe they accomplished that. So okay. The answer to your question is yes, I believe they have some kind of nuclear,
okay,
military nuclear capability.
If what you say is true, Ilana, then let me make the jump and say this. Then I think it's probably a matter of, I don't know, are we talking days or weeks before they use that weapon against Israel? Is that a fair statement or no?
It's a fair statement. I think you also have to look at a couple of other facts. One is that the Iranian army is now internally being considered unreliable because, as I said, they haven't been paid and they're not being fed. So they are restive. And I don't believe that the government can count on them. So they are counting on the IRGC, who are being well paid and well fed, and they're the ones with their fingers on the button.
Right, right. That's exactly it. As I said, the Revolutionary Guard and the military closer to the leadership are definitely being taken care of, but it's the rest of the country that is in total disarray there. IQ, I just want to ask you something straight out to follow up with what Ilana and Baruch are saying there. If Iran has this small enough nuclear weapon to get on the warhead and go again, which is not a far stretch to get to Israel from where they're at, the question is, when and will they use it? And is it just a matter of time before that happens, in your opinion?
Well, to use one weapon is useless because Israel will shower them with maybe 5, 10, 20 of them. People keep forgetting Israel does not have to fly aircraft to destroy them. They have 3 or 4 submarines with cruise missiles, which can go to the Gulf within 100 miles, 200 miles, or 300 miles with multiple entry vehicles. They can destroy a lot of Iran.
Ilana, you mentioned the relationship, which is very clear, between North Korea and Iran. Now, here's what is really questionable to many of us here. The president took a chance when he met Kim Jong-un on the demilitarized zone just here this past month, and broke history, in fact, when he went into North Korea for the first time this had happened. It was a historical moment, and of course the cameras all caught it just at that moment here. People were hoping at that point that this would maybe change things up a little bit, but it does not appear to be. Kim is firing missiles, several in the past week or so, getting very aggressive, saying they can reach South Korea and U.S. military bases and warning people. So what's going on with Kim? And obviously Trump is not able to wheel him in, although Trump has said he's not worried, but he probably is worried. Talk to me.
Well, I think probably he is wondering whether he has misjudged this man. The answer is not clear. I think Trump is a very good judge of people, and from the onset, I think he had Kim pretty well pegged. But the problem is that Kim is also not just listening to Trump, but he's also listening to China, and he is listening to probably Russia, and he's listening to maybe Iran. We don't know what the relationship between North Korea and Iran is, but we know in the past it's been very close. Mm-hmm. So he's marching to several drummers, and he has got to pick a side, but he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah,
so the president says that he is not worried about the short-range missiles that Kim has been pumping out over the China Sea. But I suspect he is worried. At least he's concerned about the fact that Kim is still a loose cannon. Mm-hmm. And nobody really seems to know what he's going to do next.
Yeah. Loose cannon is put it mildly. Juvenile would be another term to use. And there are many others we won't use here on this program here. But Baruch, let's talk about Kim Jong-un a moment here. This is really an unknown with Kim. I mean, every time we think we might, you know, get an edge on this relationship where Kim may, you know, be making progress, you just have to shake your head sometimes and wonder. And now the left is criticizing the president for giving Kim the camera and the mic by getting him all the attention. And he definitely wants the attention. You can see that in his body language it's there. Do you think that was a mistake for President Trump to really pull him close to him as a person like that, this rogue leader? Or was this the right move?
I don't think it was a mistake at all. I think it was absolutely the correct move. I think that there is no cost to it whatsoever. It's free. Photo opportunities and all of that that Trump can bestow on him is possibly valuable to Un and completely free to Trump and to America and to the rest of the world. So it's great. But I would say something else. Trump, just like all of us, you know, we approach the world from our own personal worldview. It's impossible for us to do otherwise. And I think if Trump has one blind spot, it's where he kind of assumes or judges people by the same attitude that he has. And that is that, you know, everybody strives to live well. Everybody strives to be wealthy, not only personally, but for their whole country. And that's why he was promising him those resorts and all of that. The problem is that that's not how everybody in the world sees it. Many people in the world, and I think IQ would know this, they value other things much more than money, you know, respect, honor, national pride, these types of things. And I think that, for example, North Koreans, not only Un, but maybe regular North Koreans as well, take an enormous amount of pride in being able to survive under tough circumstances and be self-reliant, self-sufficient. And I think that there is one aspect that's being kind of neglected here, and that's that blood is thicker than water, and South Koreans feel strong affinity to North Koreans. And we can see now some tensions beginning between South Korea and Japan. They recently canceled each other's whitelisting for trade, which is a big deal. And I think that has to do with the rapprochement between South Korea and North Korea. So there is a lot of things in play there, and it's very, very dangerous to assume that North Koreans, you know, all want golf courses and Lexuses. They have a different point of view, and it's important to remember that.
Yeah, that is exactly it. Yeah, you're listening to the voice there of Baruch Plettner, along with Ilana Friedman, IQ, Al Razuli, friends. And I want to invite you back to The Voice of a Nation, which is our weekday show at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And you'll hear Ilana, IQ, and Baruch as we take this conversation forward and get into more detail about what's going on with these rogue governments. You'll catch that Monday, friends, here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And listen, I want to thank all of our guests today. What an outstanding show here. Dr. Ron Martinelli, Dennis Santiago here, just amazing here. Lieutenant Joel Pangaro, Ava Armstrong, all of our members here, just thrilled to bring Viewpoint to you, friends. And my message, as always, is this. It's time to get involved and get loud.